Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 20th, 2012. I'm James Spencer.
I'm Steve Wilkes.
Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, our annual Brewers Brewing Disasters Show.
Here.
We've got all kinds of listeners from people all across the country and around the world telling us how they messed up on Brew Day and how they either recovered or didn't. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word, and you are?
Steve Wilkes, all one word.
No, it's not.
No.
Steve underscore Wilkes.
I forget. I didn't know how to say underscore. And actually, I have to interrupt you for just a minute. You're reading this thing, and it's like the tiniest words I've ever seen in my life. How can you read that? He's got a computer screen that's about 6 feet away from us.
I got my glasses.
So you're good.
Also, I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody who's been clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our site. Boy,
yeah.
They've been wearing it out this holiday season.
Love it.
We're definitely going to the Homebrewers Conference next year. The way it works is if you want to go to Amazon to buy something, go to our website first. Go to basicbrewing.com first. Click on the ad, the Amazon ad. Then it'll take you to Amazon. Then you can buy whatever you want, and we get a chunk of that.
Won't cost you anything extra.
You got that right. Same thing with our Amazon or our Brew Your Own Magazine and American Homebrewers Association links too. Find our iPhone app and our Android app, and we're on BlackBerry Podcast Directory, and we're on Stitcher as well.
Sheesh.
And you want to do the pitch for the logbook?
The 2000 and forever logbook, because we've made a perpetual calendar logbook.
That's right.
And so it'll handle 52 batches of your favorite homebrew. And you don't have to be tied into a particular year, which after...
How many batches?
I thought you said 52?
50.
Right? 50, sorry. Well, I get a little carried away.
But I interrupted you. 50 batches of homebrew. And the good thing about it this year is the calendar is blank in the
front.
That's right. So you can start your brew year at any time.
That's right. And finish it at any time.
That's right. So there you go.
There you go.
So here we are. We are drinking... the triple from Fossil Cove Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I picked up a growler yesterday.
Mm. Very nice.
It's very tasty.
It's very triple-y.
We are very lucky to have some really good local breweries now, so we can run and get a growler.
A growler.
Oh, it's going to be a long show.
I had a growler the other night, and I got beat up.
That's a brawler.
A brawler.
So anyway, I wanted to give a little plug. Oh, my God. A little plug to Ben Mills over there at Fossil Cove because he brews some tasty beer. And I also want to give a big plug to the Brew Hauler folks.
Yeah.
Because they have donated some brew haulers, the regular brew haulers, which are those strappy things that you see whenever you see, you know, carboys on our website or in our videos or whatever. They usually have the little straps on the car. Well, that's a brew hauler. And they have donated kindly some of the big brew haulers, and they've also donated some of the new little mini brew haulers for your growler
wow.
size. And they've also donated some shirts as well. So
it's pretty awesome.
We will have some prizes to give out. Now, I've decided that we're not going to announce the winners on the show.
Mm-mm.
We're just going to go through these and we're going to read them. And then afterwards, we're going to sit and drink a beer and we'll pick out our favorites.
I love that.
So everybody's a winner.
Well, the thing is, though, how are you going to get the number underneath everyone's chair? You know, like when you win a door prize? You can sneak that in.
I'm not Oprah.
Okay.
Everybody, look under your chair. Somebody just looked under their chair.
Yeah, sure. It was me.
So anyway, we appreciate very much the Brew Hauler folks for sending us the goodies. And if you don't have a Brew Hauler on your carboy, you need to get one.
Yeah.
Go to your homebrew store, and we highly recommend them, especially in our advanced states of age and such. you know, picking up a carboy is hard to do, but if you have the little strappy things on there,
yep,
it's a lot easier.
My favorite line for picking up a carboy is, haven't I seen you here somewhere before? It doesn't work.
That's sailors.
Oh, the sailors. That's right.
That shoot. Carboys. So what are we doing? Where is that? Any other business to Oh, by the way, we got a really, really good response this year to the brewing disaster stories.
Yes.
In fact, so many that we're not going to be able to read them all on the show.
Darn the luck.
Yeah. So if you don't hear your story, it's not because I didn't like it. I liked every single one. I thought they were really good. But we just got so many that... you know, these are just kind of the more spectacular ones, most of them.
The thing that I'm worried about is if you got that many, what are we doing wrong? What's going on out there?
Well, I'll tell you what we're doing wrong. I got a big stack of papers that tells you what we're doing wrong.
Well, I mean, you
know. As far as education?
Well, sure.
Well, we're doing this.
Yeah.
We're helping out. We're good. All right. Our job is to expose these disaster stories so that people can watch them.
Yes.
Or listen to them. You can watch them in your mind. But listen to the stories, and then you won't do that.
Doc, it hurts when I do this.
You don't do that.
Okay.
Last night, I broke my ribs in three places. You better stay out of those places.
Don't go there.
If I could walk that way, I wouldn't need to talk about her.
That's right. Damn these eyes.
Who needs the car talk guys?
That's right. Okay.
All right. Here we go. We're going to start digging in.
Well.
This one comes from Mark out in Parker, Colorado. And he was brewing with Dylan, Eric, and Keebum. And this is like a novel. I'm going to have to edit this thing down a little bit.
Yeah.
It was very well written. But I'm going to paraphrase. This is a Reader's Digest, the Brewer's Digest version of the story. Mark says, I get together several times a year with my son, Dylan, son-in-law, Eric, and on this occasion, my neighbor, Keebum. Our typical group brewing events have been known as Kaiser Brews. Kaiser events have become one of my favorite brew days. We have a lot of fun goofing around and speaking German phrases mixed with forms of humorous German-English linguistic alterations.
I like these people.
It's during a mid-September Kaiser brew this year we experienced a brew day disaster that necessitated some quick thinking and a late-day change of plans. As we have seen from some of the other brew day disaster stories, a critical factor isn't always the air, as it is a quick and poignant reaction. On this particular day, we were brewing 10 gallons of an American amber in my backyard. The Brew Kaiser brew days tend to be a bit hectic, since everyone helps with various jobs while speaking as unintelligibly as possible. And that's the way our brew days usually end up.
Yeah.
Milling, measuring, mashing, and chilling all go on with a great deal of confusing commotion. It was during the big chill that a procedural error produced some unexpected drama and an unexpected beer. Hmm. Wait till you hear this. I'm skipping ahead.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the recurring themes. Mark says, after refilling my pint with a fresh glass of homebrew, I was in a Charlie state of mind, i.e. relax, don't worry, have a homebrew, and a deep feeling of accomplishment settled in as I watched the beautiful amber wort for this new Kaiser brew run through the chill lines. But as I began to drink, an unsettling feeling began to surface. Nothing had gone wrong. Something always goes wrong, usually something minor, but this had pretty much been a perfect, chaotic, and fun brew day. As I watched the sinking sun, I focused on the conical. It was already nearly to the 5-gallon mark, and that seemed a bit too soon. Then a sense of dread started in my toes and crept up slowly to my reticular formation. He must be a doctor. Firing the half-pickled neurons in my frontal lobe. Did anyone remember to drain the star sand from the conical before we started filling? I lifted the lid of the conical. Holy fomito, Batman! A white, clean star sand head was rapidly climbing the sides of the conical. So, essentially, they forgot to drain the sanitizer out of the...
A little bit of clean beer.
Yeah. Well, I'm skipping ahead again. As head Kaiser, I immediately assumed responsibility for the error. I told Eric, I should have been watching. The very same thing happened to me about 6 months ago. What did you do? One of the other Kaisers asked. Well, I noticed it after about a gallon, so I basically dumped it all out the lower valve and restarted the pump. Sorry, said Eric. I can't believe I did that. It's okay, I said. You didn't get much sleep last night. We should have caught that. So let's move on. What should we do? I think we should sanitize the carboy and finish chilling the rest of the wort. How much beer do you think we lost? Asked Keeban. From the looks of it, I responded, we've got around 5 gallons in the conical now. Eric, how much star sand do you think was in there? Well, I don't know exactly, but I'm guessing about a gallon.
Ooh.
Do you think it's ruined? I don't know, I answered, but one of the guys from Star Sand spoke to our brew club recently, and the main theme I got was, don't fear the foam. I mean, I wouldn't recommend drinking Star Sand straight, but maybe we have enough wort in there, it'll be okay. Besides, James Spencer is always doing these brewing experiments, so maybe this could be our little experiment. We don't do crazy. Well, we do some crazy stuff. Not this crazy.
Well, it's pretty crazy.
At the very least, we'll find if it ferments and maybe learn a little something. So they
just went ahead with it? I mean,
yeah. Delighted that we weren't going to throw our hard work away, Eric said, we should call it Star Samber.
Yeah.
Since they were brewing an American amber.
What's the specific gravity of star sand?
Well, I don't know about star sand, but the original gravity of the American samber was 1052, while the original gravity of the American amber, because they had enough to rest to split the batch, was 1068.
So they got a 1052 beer out of that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, but it's like 4-1 wort to star sand.
Well, you know, really, this will be an interesting experiment.
So they, to make a long story short, they took the beer to the Oscar Blues Brewery in Longmont, and they were having a day where they would can homebrew for folks, which is pretty cool.
That's really cool.
So they canned this stuff, and then they aged it, and they actually drank it.
Yeah?
And he says, I'm a practicing BJCP beer judge, and if I were to judge the Samber as an American amber, I'd have to score it in the low to mid-20s.
Well, okay.
It lacks the moderate to strong malt flavors and is missing any sweetness or hop flavor. So I was like, well, what would the Star Sand people think about this? So so Mark sent an email to the Star Sand folks.
Okay.
And here's the answer that he received. Okay, the short answer is that you are safe to drink the beer. The results that you experienced are to be expected. First off, the lower pH and more water will affect the gravity as well as the flavor profiles. The phosphates in the star sand will act like a nutrient for the yeast to eat. This is why it is safe to say don't fear the foam. The sanitizer is consumed by the yeast. I don't recommend doing what you did, but as long as it is prior to fermentation, you are safe. Yes, there is a limit to where it is no longer safe. That is difficult to determine. However, if the pH of the solution is too low, less than 3.5, it will kill the yeast. That would take a lot of star sand and the wort to get to that level. As long as the pH rises above 3.5, the product is deactivated and turns into food. The other concern is, does the yeast have enough time and other sugars to consume all the star sand? Yeah. I've not done a study on this to determine the rate of consumption. To answer your question, yes, I would have dumped it because the extra water would have altered the expected results. No, it does not concern me to taste it.
Wow.
And then Mark offered to send us some, and I said, well, maybe not. We'll take your word for it. So there, that's story number one.
That's pretty powerful. I mean, I had a Star Sand disaster myself. I mean, it's been some years ago, but I left too much in the carboy, and I went ahead and brewed mine up as well, and it was okay. But I mean, I didn't hear the foam, so interesting, very interesting, actually.
Brave people out there in Colorado.
Yeah.
Ray from Chatham, New Jersey, writes, when pitching, and again, I'm paraphrasing again, when pitching today, came, I racked my brew into a bucket, and I checked the thermometer with a floating glass thermometer, checked the temperature with a floating glass thermometer I owned to make sure that pitching temperature was correct. I pitched my yeast and put it in the basement. The next morning, I went to check on my brew and was surprised to find a dark reddish residue from violent fermentation stuck all around my airlock. Well, the wort was nowhere near that color. I thought nothing of it and allowed to ferment for the normal 14 days. There was not much action for the rest of the time, but I assumed perhaps it was just a perfect storm for the yeast or maybe a side effect of the whole hops. I never knew. I popped off the lid and found myself staggering from an assault on the senses. The smell was identical to the taste of getting punched in the mouth, a metallic, rusty, copper-like smell, smell like blood or sucking on a penny, paired with a visual of big, oily, black and red bubbles covered the surface of the ale.
Goodness.
I racked to the bottling bucket and sampled a little bit. Yuck. The mouth should have listened to the nose. The taste was just as bad, and no hops or malt to speak of. Defeated, I went to clean out my oh-so-nasty fermenter. I filled it with water and dumped down the sink, but was shocked to see to the clacking of something hitting the sink. Upon further inspection, I found a few dozen metal BBs or ball bearings or buckshot that had been in the bottom of the fermenter. What the flock, he thought. F-L-O-C-C.
Yes. That's what I always associate those letters with.
I studied them closer and tested a magnet on them to ensure they were non-ferrous, lest I be worried about ingesting lead beer. Fortunately, they were steel. Unfortunately, they were not stainless steel. After a lot of trying to figure out if I was going crazy or if the beer had been tampered with, I found a culprit. The floating thermometer has a bubble of glass that is filled with small stainless weights, or apparently not stainless weights, to keep it buoyant and upright. I looked closer at mine to find that it developed a small crack in the glass, large enough for the weights to escape through. Mystery solved, but a beer and an entire summer's worth of hops down the drain. Literally, he was using homegrown
hops. That is a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, that's too bad. And, well, good to know.
And not only do you have to worry about the metal, but, you know,
glass.
There's broken glass in there. And little, really thin glass that you don't. I've broken a thermometer in a, luckily it was just a starter.
Yeah, I've broken thermometers one or two in my lifetime, but never in a beer. Never, I mean, like I dropped on the floor or something.
Right,
Wow. Okay. That's too bad.
Gail Ann from San Francisco, California. She brews a lot of 1 gallon batches of beer, and she also experiments with funky beers as well. So she said, I was making this 1 gallon batch of late edition Simcoe and Amarillo IPA, just a little respite from my ongoing sour program. I'd gotten a gift of hops, and I like doing a non-Brett beer now and then as proof of sanitation. Stunningly, I realized I've managed to fail to lug one item up from my basement, the Star Sand container. Well, that's not a problem, I thought triumphantly. One of the joys of small containers is I can make up an additional pot of boiling water on another stove burner and heat sanitize instead. No chemicals required. Hey, I could do this all the time with small batches. Foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
I confidently grabbed a funnel and the glass jug, my mini fermenter. As I poured boiling water into the clear glass vessel sitting on the counter, somewhere in the back of my mind, I was daydreaming about different kinds of glass. Let's see, you can put hot tea into a regular glass mug, but you have to use, what is that, borosilicate glass? Is that what it's called? Probably made from borax ore, like the 20 mule teams hauled from mines in Death Valley back in the day. I have some examples in the house. There's my other. By the time I came to the conclusion that it might not be a reasonable plan to blithely pour a volume of boiling water into a cheap glass apple juice jug, the jug had filled up to just below its glass finger loop handle. I stepped back, unsure of what to do next. Should I be concerned? I could carefully place the jug of hot water in the sink to contain any broken glass if there was a problem, but my wort was currently using the sink to cool down. Perhaps I could just relax, carry the jug to the bathtub, and set it gently there in case it was going to shatter. I stepped forward, reaching out to slide my finger into the glass finger loop handle. At that moment, the glass jug split cleanly along the surface of the hot water with a little pop.
Wow.
I jumped back. I was so relieved I had hesitated and was not walking to the bathtub with my finger hooked into that little handle when it split, potentially dropping a glass vessel of near-boiling water in my sandal-clad feet. So, essentially, the thing, you know, it broke at the water line.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so she says, now I'm a Star Sand fetishist. With multiple containers of dilute solution around the house and basement. I have a bottle of Iota 4 as a backup plan. I also wear shoes instead of sandals when I brew.
Yeah.
Good idea. I wish I said you should have taken a picture. I would have liked to see that.
Yeah. Huh.
So no boiling water. See, the thick glass doesn't do well with the hot water, the boiling water. That's why your carboys, you know, on the bottom it says no boiling water. You'd think that thin glass would be more fragile and would break more easily. But if you think of coffee pots or the carafes, you know, under right. those drip thingies, it's thin glass.
Yeah.
That's your little science content for you. Michael from, well, Michael didn't say where he's from. Should we just make up places?
Saskatoon.
Michael from Saskatoon.
Saskatoon.
It says, about 3 or 4 years ago, I was brewing an imperial wheat beer with a couple friends of mine for one of my friend's wedding. As luck would have it, even with 2 pounds of rice hulls, I was left with a set mash during lautering. After 4 hours of straining my pump to its limits, we had collected 12.5 gallons of wort and proceeded to boil. Everything went well until it was time to add the first addition of hops. The kettle literally exploded with wort, hops, and brake material all over the place for no apparent reason. We surmised that the foam over occurred due to the hops possibly either breaking the surface tension or covering the hard boil, thus allowing for a gas cavitation bubble to form. At any rate, we carried on, beers in hand, until it was time to shut down and begin cooling. We lifted the kegel up to a stainless steel bench from my floor burner, and even though we were wearing quarter-inch thick welding gloves, we got burned pretty badly, enough to make for second to third degree burns.
Jamie, Christmas.
After that, everything proceeded as planned, and 10 gallons of 1125 OG wort, wow, was collected, and we pitched in the 6 packages of rehydrated USL5 yeast. Terminal gravity was a nice 10-10, and the resulting beer was enjoyed by all, especially the bride. The lesson learned here taught me to make safety a key integral part of my brewing requiem. I now have a 2-tiered brewing system with a Herm's hot wort heat exchanger made from adapting my old copper immersion chiller to do a new function. Also, pressurized quick disconnects made for quick and easy way to channel hot liquor and wort without unwarranted incident. So
wow.
The lesson is, if you mess up, buy more expensive stuff. It's but we've had experience with boilovers.
Oh yeah,
and handling hot things.
You know, well, yeah. I mean, I definitely handling hot things. Of course, I mean, do that all the time. What do you think I am? But also wild things. But
have some more beer.
The boilovers. Are really, I haven't had one of those in a long time, but you just need one or two in your life.
Yeah.
And then you'd learn.
That's plenty.
Yeah, that's all you need.
Bruce and Andy from Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Yeah.
This past summer, my son and I were in the middle of a long brew day. We were out in the driveway, had just sparged, and we're going to start the boil on our third brew of the day.
Woo.
When my son suddenly noticed that everything was covered by teeny tiny gnats. I must admit that my 60-plus-year-old eyes are not quite what they once were. Boy, I can identify.
Yeah.
But sure enough, once I started looking very, very closely, he was right. It looked like everything was carpeted with those tiny little buggers. A veritable swarm had descended on us, and they were crawling on everything in sight. I remember yelling, "Sanitization!" or something like that began with S. My son called out, "Save the beer!" And that became the battle cry as we grabbed the just-filled brew pot and headed for the house. Once safely inside, like we got that, we looked at each other, and the question was, what do we do now? We have 6.5 gallons in the brew pot, bittering hops in my hand, and the burners outside. I knew from previous experience that I could eventually bring at least 3 gallons in my brew pot to a boil on one of my propane kitchen stove burners. I divided up the rest among 3 other pots on 3 other burners and got them all fired up and going. With the help of a handheld propane torch held against the side of my brew pot, I was able to eventually consolidate everything back into my brew pot. And once a steady roiling boil was established, took an extra hour, we threw in the bittering hops and were back in business. So there you go.
Jeez.
The beer has a real story behind it, and maybe this story should be called The Gnat Before Christmas.
Yeah, well, you know.
I thought that was good.
That before Christmas. Jeez.
Steve's down in Florida. Steve says, in a word, maggots.
Go see the guys with the gnats.
I brewed an Imperial IPA with homegrown hops, and when I opened the freezer to dry hop it, I noticed some white specks in the on the carboy. When I looked more closely, I noticed they were moving. Ew! I thought at first there's only a few. I can clean them off. The beer inside is okay. I rinsed the carboy off, but they were all up under the carboy cap. At that point, I decided to dump it. The prospect of calling it Fly PA was not enough to get rid of the urge to hurl at the thought of maggots in my beer. I think what happened was that I had the drain plug opened on the bottom of my temperature-controlled freezer. The fermentation was so strong, some of it spilled from the bowl. I had the blow-off tube in. Coincidentally, I had left a carved pumpkin on the floor next to the freezer after it had been outside a while in Florida, and I think that's how the flies got in there. I'm now rebrewing the same beer with the rest of my hops, and I'm making sure nothing gets in there this time.
That's good. So, although I like Fly PA.
You like Fly PA. You didn't like the Gnat Before Christmas.
Well, I like that too, but it just, I don't know. fly away all.
Have I told a story on the show about the mouse and my carboy?
I don't know.
I'll tell it again. It'll be an annual story.
Sounds like an O. Henry story.
It'll be like what's her name on the on Morning Edition? The cranberry sauce.
Yeah.
That'll be our annual thing. I went down into the basement and I kept noticing that there was this kind of smell coming from somewhere. And after a while, it went away. And I looked around and couldn't find it. So I went to get a carboy to brew something, and I picked it up. I noticed that the foil cap had been knocked off. I didn't think anything of it, and then I picked it up, and I noticed there was something at the bottom of the carboy. There was the remains of a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted out that I was going to throw this carboy away, and people were saying, just wash it out. Just clean it out. No, you don't understand.
Yeah.
The mouse had taken the foil off the top, committed suicide, jumped down into the bottom there, died, and then the process of putrefaction that he went through, it essentially exploded all over the bottom of the of the carboy, and then all the juices had dried. And I said, even if I can clean all this up, I'm not going to be wanting to drink the mouse beer.
Yep.
So anyway, that's my gross story.
That's pretty gross.
You had a mouse-related experience, too, I think we've talked about.
Yeah, mine were in bottles. They were little mice, I guess.
Like shipping a bottle only.
Yeah. Oh, rodent, be still my heart.
You could have brewed a beer and called it Rodenbach.
Rodenbach. Take me back to Rodenbach, Texas.
Stevie T from Gilderland, New York.
Is that his name?
Yeah, that's hyphenated.
Oh, good. I thought maybe it was from a stripper in New York. Steamy T.
Stevie T.
Oh, Stevie. Sorry. I thought it was steamy.
Back in 2012, I made a kiwi wit beer. That sounds good.
Sounds good.
Brew day went well. Fermentation went well, and then I kegged it. I brewed the beer for a party, and it needed to be carbonated pretty quickly, so I did the shake method. I let the keg sit in the beer fridge for a couple days. I hooked it up, hooked the tap line to it, which is made of two different diameter hoses.
Foreshadowing.
The smaller hose was stuck into the larger one. No hose clamps on the connection area.
Oops.
The length of the two hoses combined were giving me perfect pours from previous kegs. I tasted the beer, and it wasn't carbonated to where I wanted it to be. I closed the fridge and went back upstairs. About 30 minutes later, I went back down into the basement to grab a different beer. Halfway down the stairs, I started to smell a kiwi scent. And this is not the animal. This is the fruit, I'm assuming.
Yeah, let's hope.
There was a small puddle of beer around the fridge, and inside it, beer was all over, and about 3 gallons were in the pullout drawer. Since I forgot to take the tap line off the keg, the high pressure from the CO2 tank caused the two hoses to come apart. It emptied the entire keg and also my entirely newly filled CO2 tank. I was pretty bummed out, and many bad words were yelled. After it was all cleaned up, my dad and I had a good laugh about it, and I brewed it again a few days later. So there you go. As long as you have an opportunity to laugh with your dad.
That's right.
It's good. Everything's good.
Yep.
We emptied one of my CO2 tanks when we were bottling that beer with Paul the other day, the
That's
lager.
Right, we did.
Something, there was a seal that was wrong on the...
A little O-ring or something.
On the, yeah. Luckily, I had one of those little, you know, cartridge things.
That, yeah, those are handy.
There's a, sponsor next year's show along with Brewhaller. Ben from... Dunsmuir, California. I'm from Arkansas. Says, I've been homebrewing for about 3 years now, and last year decided to make my first fruit beer, a 2.5-gallon batch of blueberry pale ale. I wanted to start simple, and since I love blueberries, I figured this would be an easy one. Foreshadowing. Going off the wisdom from your podcasts, as well as Mike Tonsmeyer's Mad Fermentationist blog, I went with freezing the blueberries and putting them into the fermenter during secondary. Much to my chagrin, a week later, there was a bit of a pellicle on the beer. Now, if you're new to funky beers, that's when the top of the thing gets kind of dusty.
Yep.
And not hairy, but, you know, it's just something going on in there. There must have been some unwanted bacteria on or in the blueberries that snuck into the beer. Drat! Having made several sour beers, bacteria-laden ales, previously I wasn't too distressed. While, yes, I was looking for a clean ale, I decided to make the most of it and poured in the dregs of some of my favorite sours. Russian River Sanctification, lots of Brett Lacto and Pedio, a few other commercial sours as well. As some sour trube from a lambic I'd racked around then.
Wow.
About a month later, there was a sizable pellicle. I'm talking thick. Had I reported this to the proper authorities, it may have required a hazmat team. And he sent photos that we can look at later.
Who you got to call?
Pellicle busters.
That's right.
So I bottled a single 12-ounce bottle just to see what I had created. 2 weeks later, I had a taste of it, and it tasted like an infected, watered-down blueberry juice. It was disgusting. I'd just about given up when I decided to do what I could to salvage the beer. It was a bit watery, so I added a gallon of very dry triple I had just brewed. Also, the blueberry flavor was a bit too strong, so in my crazy mind, I figured adding another fruit might balance it out. So I added a gallon of an orange pale ale I'd recently brewed as well. I can see you cringing. How can he do that? I can see you cringing, and yes, nowhere along the way did I think I could salvage this beer. I did, however, take copious notes, and I figured I'd at least learn a thing or two along the way. Plus, I've never dumped a batch of beer, and I really wanted to keep it that way. I then left the fermenter alone for 6 months. I ended up bottling them into a bunch of 750-milliliter bottles and put them in a cool place. A few months after that, I crashed a bottle and had a taste. Holy moly, James, the thing was tasty!
Yep.
I'm not necessarily talking Cascade Barrel House, Russian River, or La Folie, but definitely a wonderful creation from something that basically started out as a dud. Ben is sending us some.
That's great.
I was hoping it'd be here before we had a chance to record the show, but maybe we can do New Year's Eve or something.
I think that'd be great.
Thanks, Ben, for the story and for in advance for the beers.
Well, once again, the lesson is don't panic.
Don't panic.
Yeah. I mean, I remember melon blood comes to mind.
Yes.
Remember the melon
Yes,
blood?
Our beer made with 100%, all the brewing water was watermelon juice.
Yeah, and it was disgusting.
At first. Now it's good.
It was good.
Actually, I have some chilled down. Maybe we could try it after this.
Wow.
Eric writes, Philly. He's from Eric from Philadelphia. My most recent brew day, I was brewing up a 10-gallon batch of my Amarillo wheat beer.
Yep.
This is a standard in the house and should have gone off without a hitch. Sadly, it did not. Finally got cold up here in Philly, and I didn't recall to preheat my tun. Summer brewing tricked me, so I had to pump the strike water back to my hot liquor tank and reheat. reheated the water, then dove in. At this point, I realized my refractometer is missing, and since this is a low ABV brew, 1040, I guess I'll have to guess when to stop the sparge. Start sparging, and then it sticks. Turns out the washer that is used as part of my Blickman false bottom was lost at some point, and now I have grain below the false bottom. And we all know how painful that can be.
I'm telling you.
I used to have a plastic false bottom, and that happened a lot.
Metamucil. Good for that.
At this point, I used a favorite trick of mine and blew back through the kettle valve with my trusty bike floor pump. This cleared the blockage and allowed me to recirculate and dump mostly wort into the kettle. I still got grain thanks to the missing washer. Started my boil about 10 minutes in, the tank kicked, the propane tank. I grabbed the spare from the grill area. Sadly, the spare was almost empty, too, so I drove to the gas station for a tank swap. Fired up the kettle and boiled as per normal. Now it began to rain.
God almighty!
Fortunately, this is not super unusual, so I rigged up my tarp and soldiered on. I added my hops, whirl flock, etc. without incident, knocked out and did a hop stand, as opposed to a kickstand, and then started the whirlpool. At this point, my pump gave out.
It's like the Philadelphia Eagles. It's their season. Who's your quarterback?
Turns out the grain that got under the false bottom also got into my pump. So I whirlpooled by hand and fired up the wort chiller, which began to spray water everywhere.
No, it's the Chiefs season. Even worse.
Turns out the compression fitting had come loose, so I tightened that up and covered the fitting with a towel and resumed chilling. Finally, I gravity drained into my fermenters. The brew day was complete at least 7 or 8 hours after I had started. I was burnt, bruised, and partially frozen at the end of it all. The moral of the story, buy spare washers. I now own 20 316 stainless washers that fit the loose or the false bottom. And the loose bottom, that's a different story.
That's completely EQ pectate for that.
Hope you enjoy my suffering, Eric.
That's a great story.
P.S. The beer turned out surprisingly normal despite having boiled the grain that got pumped into the kettle from the mash. Accidental decoction, anyone?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Stuck sparge, rain. I had a similar thing happen to me this year with an extract brew. It wasn't exactly a stuck sparge.
Sparge with an extract brew.
That's hard to do.
You're working hard at that.
No, so I was doing the experiment. I was doing the no chill experiment.
Yeah.
And so I had my big kegel thing, you know, my converted keg into the kettle thing. Out there, and I'd fitted it with a new braided hose thing.
You know, okay, yeah.
For the outlet.
Yeah.
And which I had tested the day before with water. But this was a 10-gallon extract batch, 12 pounds of light dry malt extract, and then a whole bunch of hops, you know, boiled for only 15 minutes. And, of course, the hops clogged up the filter.
Yep.
You know, I got like...
It's like antibodies on Raquel Welch.
You
Shroom!
I could watch that scene all day.
Get them off!
That'll help. So it stopped. And so the thing was, I was supposed to rack half of the hot boiling wort into this plastic container for the no-chill, and then chill the second half, and then rack it, you know, easy greasy. It was supposed to be easy.
Right.
Well, you know, so what I did was I ran and I got a pan, like a, you know, 3-quart pan, and I scooped out hot wort into the plastic container, and then chilled, and then it started raining. You know, thunderstorm came up, and the wind and all that, and so I got my 15-year-old son to help me pick up the kegel. And then my bright idea was going to pour it into a funnel into the carboy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that kegels are not designed to pour from the top. So we got wort on our shoes, on the patio, everywhere. And luckily for us, it did rain and washed everything off afterwards. So anyway, that's my story.
And you're sticking to it.
And I stuck to the carboy as well.
And the ground.
And the ground. And
carpet later. And...
It's like, take off your shoes before you go into the house. Oh, now this is easy. My name's Jason, and I'm writing from Ontario, Canada. There you go.
Yeah.
Got it. Got that in there. I was brewing a vanilla cream ale that I'd chosen at random from a friend's recipe book because I had all the ingredients on hand. I just purchased a used 6.5 gallon fermenter at a garage sale a few weekends before and was planning on using it as my primary fermenter so I would have more room for foam expansion, having learned that unwatched fermentation can be messy and another smaller disaster. We started our mash, and that's probably last time we used math or reason that night. A few friends came over to check out the process, and we may have gotten a little carried away. We sparged and started our boil, and during the boil, there was a very large amount of trub in the kettle. So when it came time to cool and rack to the fermenter, I avoided as much as I could and left some wort in the kettle. What was supposed to be my 5-gallon batch looked a little small on the carboy, but I figured out it was just an illusion due to the larger capacity. We hit our temp and pitched, and for everyone there learning that night, nothing went wrong. Fast forward to racking to the secondary. This is where some of my mistakes became apparent. There was only about 3.5 to 4 gallons in my secondary. I went back to my notes and realized we only sparged to reach a boil volume of 5 gallons, which was boiled off or left behind with the trub, which I've since learned listening to your show that a little isn't necessarily a bad thing. A little trub in the fermenter.
Mm-hmm.
I became a little discouraged and kind of forgot about it. When I was moving to my new home 2 months later, I'd rediscovered the carboy and thought, well, what have I got to lose? I was on the fence about having less good beer or boiling water and topping up after fermentation and having more beer. Let's just say I made the wrong decision. I racked my beer into the bottling bucket with my priming sugars and my top-up water and was set to bottle when I was called away. When I returned, I was fearful of stirring my beer and introducing oxygen, so I just bottled as normal and thought nothing of it. So fast forward again to 3 weeks later. Can you guess?
Yeah, I think.
What's your guess?
Well, I'm going to guess and say that some of the bottles are really strong beer and some of the bottles are pretty much water.
I grabbed a 12-pack from my cellar and gave it a taste. Upon opening the first bottle, the carbonation was through the roof. Not a bottle bomb, but very heavily carbed. The beer tasted just fine. I was amazed at how many things could go wrong, and you could still produce a halfway decent beer. However, I had to call off my celebration parade when it came time to open the second, third, and fourth 12-pack. No carbonation whatsoever. It tasted like a watered-down hydrometer sample. Looking back, I'm thinking all the sugars settled to the bottom of my bottling bucket, in my absence, and were drawn into the first few bottles. It's been 3 or 4 months now, and I test them every now and then, but the ones that have carved up over time are still very weak-bodied from my water addition. So between a low-volume sparge-slash-boil, unfamiliarity with my new equipment, poor decisions, and bad timing, yes, you can make a bad beer. You hit it. You got it.
Well,
good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just needed to, when he came back, he just should have stirred.
That's right.
Not vigorously to introduce oxygen
right.
At that point, but...
And you know, I think that, I mean, oxidation's a bad thing. I'm not trumpeting oxidation, but
right.
The greater sin here was not thoroughly incorporating all your ingredients.
Right.
And so I would rather have a little bit of oxidation, knowing that I've got a beer I'm going to drink quickly, you know, unless you're going to save that thing back in a wine rack or some kind, you know, for a long time. You know, it'll come up. It'll be a fresh beer. You'll drink it. You'll have a big party. The oxidation won't have time to affect it. That's my theory.
Just drink better beer first.
That's right. That's exactly. Yeah.
Drink better beer first.
That's on my. It'll be on my gravestone.
And I told you I was sick.
Yeah. Don't lance that. That'll be the. Okay. Enough grave jokes.
My name is Andrew, and I'm from Norfolk, Virginia.
Ah.
That's how you pronounce that, right?
I'm not from there.
Whereas I did not necessarily have a brewing disaster, I had more so a bottling disaster. Over the course of 6 months, I had nearly half of my batches repeatedly come out uncarbonated, no matter how long I let them age. I figured it could be a result of using fruits, vegetables, or poor sanitation or temperature. However, over the same 6 months... I had many batches come out perfect. After finally hitting my breaking point, I decided to give up and am going to finally get my Cornelius keg ready to go. I got my kegerator up and running and then began an attempt to salvage a Sriracha Ace Pale Ale that had failed to carbonate. As I'm pouring the bottles into the corny, I began to notice that the majority, which had lime green caps, were completely uncarbonated. But a handful of gold caps were carbonated perfectly. I told my girlfriend that I could predict which bottles would be carbed correctly and which wouldn't. Now, that's a party trick.
Yeah.
She watched as I correctly called about 10 bottles. The lime green bottles didn't work right. I called the website I purchased them from and spoke with an extremely helpful customer representative. The same company I purchased the bottle caps from also owns a website called brewcaps.com, which makes bottle caps just for brewing. Oh, the original one was bottlecapco.com. The site I ordered from makes their caps just for arts and crafts. So I essentially bottled 5 batches with caps that didn't work and had an extra few hundred just lying around. Make sure you order caps that include a liner. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Me neither.
So you can get caps, bottle caps without a liner for arts and crafts.
I have a look of dismay on my face. Who knew?
Incredulity.
And why would you not even want one with a liner for arts? I mean, what would you bottle that you wouldn't want it to be bottled?
Well, maybe you glue them on your, macaroni sculpture.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, that's...
I don't know.
Yeah, kind of a National Endowment for the Arts thing there.
Maybe you have some decoupage.
Decoupage. I had some the other night.
That's good for the loose bottom, too.
Yeah,
the decoupage.
Yeah, I like that kind of pizza. You get the decoupage with mushroom, It's good.
Okay, this is from Ryan.
Yeah.
And I don't think Ryan said where he's from. So where is he from?
He's from Saskatoon. He's from Milwaukee.
Ryan says, my friend and I decided to take on a 20-gallon brew session, each of us brewing 10 gallons on our systems. My friend was doing a triple decocted German Pilsner. Oh, my God.
Ooh.
And I was brewing a simple American Pale Ale. I'm sure you...
Who got the better deal out of that? Better into that deal.
I'm sure you all realize how time-consuming it is to successfully complete a triple decoction. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I do.
20 gallons in one day is a great idea. One of them being a decoction is a terrible idea. Doing it when you're hosting a Christmas party is a bad idea. Doing it when you're hosting a Christmas party with a toddler running around with a screaming infant and a wife going crazy is an utter disaster. Not only did the decoction wind up taking an enormous amount of effort, it resulted in a stuck sparge. By the time the party ended, sometime after midnight, we had collected the entire volume for boil and decided to seal it up and boil it the next day.
So it's a no chill.
That's right. It's a no boil.
It's a no boil.
So guess who was tasked with picking up his rig and taking all of our wort to boil? That would be yours truly. It wound up being a pretty tasty beer, but what a nightmare that day was.
Wow.
There you go. Ryan up in Saskatchewan, Milwaukee.
Say, yeah. It's Northland.
Yeah. You did kind of, was that a Maine thing you just did?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. This is from Steve. Does Steve not say where he's from either? I guess not.
He's from Colorado.
Okay. Well, there you go. Probably a good bet. Now, this is a story of doing 10 single hop batches. In one day. After doing a 5 and 10-gallon single wort / single hop split batches to compare hops, I decided to gather all the sea hops for a massive single wort single hop batch. I collected everything that started with a C, even European varieties, Calypso, Cascade, Celia, Centennial, Challenger, Chinook, Citra, Cluster, Columbus, and Crystal.
Wow.
I devised an APA recipe using dry malt extract to help overcome the capacity of my mash tun, gathered equipment from friends, and enlisted only one of them for help. Okay, so this is written as a chronology. Day before, measured all the hops, 60, 20, 5, 0, and dry hop additions, and weighed all the grain, 34 pounds.
Man.
Brew day, 6 a.m. Drill quit working. started grinding the rest of the malt by hand. 7 a.m., friend arrives. 10 batches? 10? Got coffee? Aspirin? 8 a.m., need another mash tun. Quick, run to Home Depot for parts. 9 a.m., ran out of propane on one of the four burners. Bought extras. 10 a.m., hit mash temp on the nose and both tuns. That's a good thing. 11 a.m., runoff looks good so far. 12 a.m., that's 12 p.m., actually, noon. Uh-oh, where the hell did I put all 36 gallons of this wort? 12:30, arrived back home with new 45-gallon trash can. 1 p.m., added dry malt extract. Oops, it clumped up in the trash can. Sieved it out and did a quick boil. Oops, melted the rim of the new trash can, pouring the DME back in. 2 p.m., start the first round of boils. 2:30, maybe I should have staggered the start times? 5 p.m., decide to milk another 5-gallon batch out of all that grain. 9 p.m., finally, the last of 10 2.5-gallon brews is chilled and ready for the yeast. I only have 8 dry yeast packets. 10 p.m., final 5-gallon batch chilled and ready for its meager portion of yeast. 11 p.m., friend leaves with this. Hehe, bottling day is going to be another good one.
Wow.
He said bottling day was another good one indeed. 14 hours of cleaning and sanitizing and racking and priming and bottling and labeling and storing alone.
That's epic. That's just epic. It's just like, I don't know. It's a marathon.
Now, he's challenged to say his last name. His last name is spelled F-A-U-R-O-T. How would you say that?
Let me read it.
It's only one word.
I know.
It takes so long.
Well, you know, I'm a slow reader. Farrat.
Farrat?
Yeah.
I would say Farro.
Well,
just because I'm fancy.
Yeah, yeah. Got a little French thing going there. Kind of an Anglo-Saxon myself.
Well, thank you, Steve. Oh, this one, I'm going to move this closer to the, because I think he's, Andrew has a story here. Wake up, computer.
While you're doing that, I need a...
Okay, why don't you freshen your beer?
I need to freshen my beer.
And I'll get this started. Now we're back. This comes from Andrew. Not sure where's Andrew from?
He's from Cleveland.
I don't know. We don't know where he's from. Not from Saskatoon.
He used to be.
Okay. Now, we've got my computer here. Andrew has made a video.
Oh.
Says, I heard you call for letters describing brewing disasters. I thought you'd get a kick out of the little one I videotaped. A few years ago, after I just learned to brew myself, I tried to record parts of my brew day in order to teach my brother in California. So he's not in California. Certain parts of my process were disasters waiting to happen. I'll just let the video speak for itself. I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it. We'll mention that now I have a half-barrel, all-electric brewery with a plate chiller instead of that nutty pool noodle contraption you see in the video. So,
okay.
All right. Now, what we're going to have to do, we're going to have to narrate this.
We're going to watch the video.
And narrate it. As it's good. And I'll see if I can put this on our Facebook page.
Yes, so do. And you'll do play-by-play and I'll do color.
Okay. All right. Now, here we go. Here we go.
All right.
The video is titled on YouTube, Using Pool as Brewing Chiller. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm interested to see what you think about this.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Just about done chilling a wort here.
Now, Andrew.
This really is a pool.
So Andrew is describing his process. He's got a pool noodle, one of those, you know, floaty things,
yep,
wrapped up in duct tape around his brew pot, which, yep, is floating inside the pool noodle.
This is a swimming pool.
A swimming pool.
Yeah.
And so the kettle is floating in the pool with a pool noodle wrapped around it, and he's got the wort chiller going, the immersion chiller going through, and the outflow is also in the pool, which is ingenious.
This is innovative.
Okay, now... Yeah.
Little plumber butt going there.
Now, we cut to see we've got the carboy, a 5-gallon carboy.
Yeah.
With a funnel in it. And then he's taken the pool noodle. He's going to take... He says he's got it down to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. Now he's trying to pull the pool noodle off of the kettle. Okay, now that worked okay.
Yeah.
Now he's going to pour. He's going to pour this. What is that? A 40-quart kettle?
It's a big kettle.
Pouring it, and up comes the dog. Here's the dog.
Here comes the dog.
Now, some of the wort is getting in the funnel. Actually, most of the wort. Oh, look out!
There's a spill.
Yeah, but it's good. He's outside. Now the dog is licking the immersion chiller.
Well, that's okay. Dogs don't have germs like we do.
And Andrew is wondering why. He's wondering why his why the thing isn't filling up like it should be. And maybe you should wonder why his feet are getting wet. And now the dog is licking the carboy. Okay, so now he's got the thing down. Now he's getting most of the wort going in the carboy there. And now we're in fast motion, so he's filling it up. Everything looks pretty good so
far.
Yeah,
it's working all right.
But what do you notice about this?
I think I've experienced this.
Would you describe that? The
there's a little more wort than will fit in the year it goes. It's okay.
Now the dog is licking the top of the carboy, the actual mouth.
Looks like now, a German short hair.
That's a little too much.
Yeah.
Now Andrew, he's saying, maybe I should have boiled that a little bit more. Yeah, barley, get his name. I want to pause this for just a second. If you look at it, the wort is all the way up to
That's topped up already
to where the carboy curves in up on the way up to the mouth. Yep. And now he walks in with how much starter would you say that is?
It looks like I can't see it now, but
that's like the biggest Erlenmeyer flask I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, it's about a quart at least.
That's at least 2 liters of starter that he's going to try to put.
Yeah.
He's going to put, 10 pounds of grain in a 5-pound bag.
I've done that.
Now he's standing perplexed, staring at the. He's saying it's got too much in it.
You got to get some of that out of there, dude.
Okay, now he said, if I dump this in here, it's going to fill it right up, and I'll have no.
I predict he's going to do it anyway.
There he goes.
Yep. I love it. It wasn't okay.
So now he's not going to. He's not even going to have room in the carboy for all of the starter.
I love this. Oh, and he left most of the yeast.
Oh, yeah, now the yeast is coming out of the top. No, he takes the funnel out, and it's completely full. It's like full all the way to the top. Should have paid attention, he says. Well, there you go.
Well, we're not laughing with you. We're laughing
word,
at you.
Last word. Oh, brother.
Oh, brother. That was great. But who hasn't done that? I ask you.
I haven't done it that bad.
I have.
Well, we videotaped you putting too much mead must into a, you tried to put like 4 gallons of mead must into a 3-gallon carboy.
Well, it was actually about, I'm going to say 3.5 gallons in a 2.5 gallon.
Okay.
So
I stand corrected.
You do. Well, I had a 0.5 gallon too much. I miscounted my 0.5 gallon pours when I was making my water. And I had a 0.5 gallon too much, and then I didn't allow for the honey, for the actual volume of the honey. But it made a wonderful addition to the beer I brewed later that day.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
And it was a tasty mead as well. Okay.
All right.
We're going into the speed round now.
Speed round.
Stuart from Lambert, Scotland. Says, Scottish craft brewers, give us a shout out. Oi.
Oi.
Is that what you said?
No, I don't think so.
here are my most recent brewing disasters. Number one, I brew in a bag and also use hop bags, so I no longer need my perforated copper tube hop stopper that attaches to the tap in my electric boiler. I started using the copper hop stopper as a weight to keep the hop bag from flapping around and also as a source of copper in the boil.
I love to say copper hop stopper. It's one of my favorite things to say. I trot that out at holiday parties. I see you've got a copper hop stopper. I had a sexual harassment suit from that one.
So that's why they have that rule now.
That's right.
It's on bulletin boards across the country.
It's a CHS rule.
I haven't been able to find it for my last few brews, and it suddenly dawned on me that I must have dumped the hop stopper along with the spent hops
what I did.
Into the dustbin. And he says, arse. It's probably swearing over there, but it's not over here.
I'm sure it is.
Number two, I normally use a 25-liter HDPE jerry can type container to chill, but in a recent batch I had a brainwave, and so I thought I'd save time by pitching the near-boiling wort straight into a PET better bottle to cool. As the 90 degree Celsius wort hit the PET, I suddenly remembered that better bottles are only rated up to 60 C. The better bottle quickly started to revert back to its original form, which is a blob of shapeless plastic.
Arse.
Yeah, well, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go over an hour. What
care.
The heck?
I don't care.
It's a disaster. Sam, also, he's in Ireland. Tale for you, brewing your brewing disaster show. Feel free to cut it down if I ramble on. He's the one of the shorter ones.
Yeah.
I was working on a 5-gallon batch of all-grain black IPA and trying out a new approach to my brew day using a timer temperature controller and electric HLT to preheat my liquor so it would be ready for me to get up early in the morning and mash in, then head back to bed, sure that I would be woken by my 2-year-old son in time to mash out. This morning, and only this morning, he chose to sleep in like a teenager until 10, and then by the time all the morning rituals were done, the mash had been going for 6 hours. I think this might have caused the solid, unmovable, stuck sparge I suffered. After an hour of trying all the techniques I could think of or find online for unstucking a mash, I had a brainwave. Boy, the other guy had a brainwave. Stuart had a brainwave, too. Or no, wait. This is still the same level.
Yeah.
My brainwaves are... amplitude's not as good as they should be. I could simply pour the entire mash into a brew in a bag and dunk sparge this. I carefully fitted the bag inside the boil kettle, lifted the mash tun, and tipped with good aim. My feet started getting hot. The kettle tap was wide open, of course.
Yeah.
So he was pouring into a kettle. I've done that with a bottling bucket before.
I have, too.
It's like, hey, okay, I've got that rack going. Hey, whoa! ended up with a 4-gallon boil, but the beer made it. My shoes did not. Excellent. Okay. Jason in Orlando, Florida. Pardon me. you talked about my drive to work here in Orlando is usually timed perfectly when I have Stitcher on the 1.5x speed setting. It's going to be a little longer today.
Yeah.
And if he's talking on 1.5x. Okay. I tend to brew around 8:30 Sunday evenings after getting home from our church's evening service. Since I brew partial mash and extract at this point, I'm usually able to get to bed by about 12:30 after everything is cleaned and put away. On a particular evening, I shot too high and decided that I would bottle a batch and brew a batch in the same night, forgetting that bottling itself can take me 1.5 hours to get done well. I usually bottle using a siphon and one of those pushpin bottle fillers. This particular batch was a lavender pale ale, and about halfway through, it sucked in one little lavender bud that had survived through at least 2 other siphonings and a racking. When I went to pull the wand out of the bottle, it just kept flowing. And since I usually sit lower than the bucket while I do it, I created a good mess trying to get the wand up high enough to stop the siphon. Not a giant deal, but this was only the first incident of the night. After bottling was complete, I started on an Imperial Blonde Ale that I was very excited about. I am still limited to our kitchen stove, which is a glass top model.
That's what I have.
And was using my wife's non-pressure canner to boil in. I have since upgraded my cooking system, but the gap between the bottom of the pot and the stovetop always makes heat times take forever. By the time I finished with the specialty grain, heated it, added the light malt extract, or liquid malt extract, and got it to boil, it was already 12:45. The boil went off without a hitch. I chilled with the three or so gallon boil in an ice bath and siphoned it into the bucket, then added the water, mixed, aerated, and pitched. As I went to grab the bucket lid, I noticed a bag of DME sitting next to it. By this point, I'd unsanitized most of my boiling equipment, and I was panicking a little bit over how I was going to get it into the wort. I'd used the last of my sanitizer that evening, so there was no way to really sanitize whatever I used to scoop whatever amount into another pot to boil it. So I just decided to go for it. If it got ruined. I scooped a quart out and boiled it in a 1 gallon pot. I started to add the malt, dry malt extract, but as soon as it hit the water, it was foam city all over the place. Immediately, it was on the glass top burner and most of the stove, some dripping down onto my already sticky floor. I slowed down, cleaned up a bit, and finally got all the extract dissolved. Fortunately, I still had some ice, and the cooling went quick. I poured it in the bucket, gave it another vigorous stir to add more oxygen to it, and snapped the lid on. At this point, it was 3 a.m. I slid it into my fermentation closet and cleaned and scrubbed and scoured my equipment and kitchen, which took some time. My last task was to take the spent grain and the tube out to the compost bin. As I went to open the sliding glass door to come back in, it wouldn't budge. Somehow, I had locked myself out at 4 a.m.
At least he's in Orlando?
Yes.
It's just not cold.
You're always looking at the positive side.
I always see a silver lining.
We had recently moved into this place, and I didn't know that that particular door had a sense of humor and would sometimes just drop the latch into place when it's closed too hard.
Yep.
After scaring the crap out of my wife so she'd let me in, I decided that I was calling off the next day.
You see, if he had been in Saskatoon...
That would have been a lot colder.
It would have been a lot colder.
But the chilling would have gone quicker. Okay, two more.
Woo!
Greg in Bowmansville, Pennsylvania. I have my first brewing disaster story to share. I have had small things happen, like dropping a carboy. Okay, first of all, that's not a small thing. Dropping a carboy and
I want to hear what the big things are. Yeah.
Dropping a carboy and breaking it, and boilovers and such. Nothing major. But last Monday, while I was brewing in my garage, it happened. I was trying to do two brews in a day. This is a recurring theme. First beer was an ESB, second a stout. I mashed in the ESB and the temperature was high, so I had to stir the mash to bring the temperature down. When I drained the mash tun, I noticed grain coming out of the spigot, but thought nothing of it and continued draining. I put the first runnings on the burner to start heating them while I sparged the grains. At the end of the sparge, I realized my manifold had come apart.
Yep.
And the valve to the mash tun was totally clogged. I decided to scoop the grain out into my funnel with a strainer in it. Things were going along slowly when I dropped the funnel into the bucket I was using to collect the second runnings. I decided to pour the bucket through the funnel into a carboy. While pouring the bucket, the first runnings on the burner, remember them, decided to it needed some attention and boil over. I ran to turn off the burner. In doing so, I dropped the bucket, spilling about a gallon of the second runnings and grains that were in the bucket. At this point, I was a little upset and wet from the wort splashing out of the carboy onto my legs. I decided I needed to stop and take a breather, and then continued scooping the grain from the mash tun and got a total of about 5 gallons into the pot.
Gosh.
The rest of the boil went off without a hitch, but my original gravity was 10 points low. After all this fun was over, I realized I had a second brew to do. The second beer went well. Okay, would you have the stamina to do the second beer?
No, that would have been it.
Second beer went well, and the day was about 8 hours of brewing and cleaning the garage. Lesson learned, my mash tun manifold has been getting a little loose in the joints, and I guess the stirring of the mash unhooked the pipes. We'll be getting some stainless steel screws to hold the pipes together and asking for a false bottom from Santa.
Boy, that guy is serious.
So good for you, Greg.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. And this is from Tim Lieber, who we met up at the Homebrewers Conference with his mead experiment. Remember? Was it raspberry mead that he had?
Mm-hmm.
It was so wonderful.
Very nice.
Coincidentally, the other night, a couple nights ago, I was looking at my beer fridge and I noticed that I had, we brought three bottles back one each of that batch, and I shared that with my wife.
Well, there you go.
And it was very, very good. So thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for nothing.
You have a fine, steady hand.
It's a call back to Caddyshack. Well, thanks for nothing. Okay. Years ago, in the fall, I got in my mind to start making mead. So I went out and got a copy of Brewing Mead, Wassail, in Mazers of the Mead by Robert Geyer and Charlie Papazian. The recipes in it suggested boiling the honey. So my brother and I got my future sister-in-law's largest pot, added the honey and enough water to bring it up to an inch or so of the pot. The book mentioned skimming the foam, and we figured we'd left plenty of space in the pot. When the honey water came to a boil, it started foaming vigorously all over the stove and even down inside the electric range top. After a few moments of paralyzing terror, we got the foaming under control, mainly due to the fact that the honey provided its own headspace when it boiled over. That's handy how that happens.
Yeah.
We wiped down the outside of the pot and put it back on the heat. The funny thing about sugar, when it gets hot, first it caramelizes, then if it gets hot enough, it burns. We went from honey boiling over to having the stovetop in flames. Luckily, my brother and I were both Boy Scouts, so this time we snapped into action and got the fire under control in a second or two. At this point, the whole house smelled like burnt caramel, but we got the job done. The honey we had left went into the carboy with enough water to make 5 gallons. Since we could not find the hydrometer, we decided to forego taking an original gravity reading. In went the yeast and the urea and acid blend, and on went the fermentation lock. We parked the carboy in a closet on an outer wall and let it go.
Oh, boy.
2 months later in January, all signs of fermentation had stopped. We gave it another couple weeks to be sure and bottled at the end of January. We tasted a little, and it was not great, but it was not the worst thing either. The bottled mead went into a little storage area that was not climate controlled, and all was well. Is that the end of the story? No.
No.
Until March came along. At this time, I lived in Kansas City.
There you go.
And we get warm periods in the spring where it can get up into the low 80s for a day or two. One weekend, my brother and future sister-in-law were out, and it warmed up for a good 4 days. Well, the yeast woke up and, finding plenty of sugar, went to town. We'd bottled 30 wine bottles, and by the time I got the phone call to come help clean or else, we were down to 4.
Wow.
Imagine 26 bottles of half-fermented mead dried on a linoleum floor. I don't think she got her cleaning deposit back on that apartment.
Probably not.
My brother and I tried one of them and spent the next few nights trying to figure out how honey and water transformed into a blend of kerosene, sterno, Band-Aids, and Stinkfoot.
Well...
There is a silver lining to the story, though. My future sister-in-law had a roommate before my brother moved in that still had some of the stuff in that storage closet. She stole our last 3 bottles of mead and took them to a New Age crystal weenie camping weekend.
That's too good.
Without tasting it first, passing it around, she was quite proud of it from what I heard. So, would you do your hopper? What is it?
Copper hop stopper.
You want to take that to the New Age crystal weenie camping weekend?
That's like putting an armadillo in your brew bucket.
Oh my goodness! Well, there you have it.
Well, that was. That was every disaster that you could ever have.
Every disaster.
Well, every single one.
Now you know why I had to trim the number.
I
thought I trimmed enough, but we still went over. So thanks to everybody. Like we said before, Steve and I are going to get together and pick out our favorites. And although they're all good.
They're all good.
I mean, even the ones I didn't read are good. They're just, you know, just fewer injuries. So we'll send you some stuff from. And thanks once again to the Brew Hauler folks for kicking in the stuff. And if you don't have a Brew Hauler on your carboy, and now your growler with the little mini Brew Hauler thing, you need to get one.
Yep.
So now's the time to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So here's where we say, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check our DVDs on our site, along with our new Brewer's Logbook, and you can see a list of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs. And if you click on the Amazon.com link, you'll be helping us out and pick out a couple of things. We're looking at the list of things over the past week that were bought through the link. Oh my gosh!
There's just so much.
There is.
How about My Bread, the Revolutionary No Work, No Need Method, and How to Tell If Your Cat Is Plotting to Kill You. Sorry, I wasn't facing the microphone. Yeah. And don't forget, it won't cost you an extra penny, and you'll help support the podcast and keep us on the air.
That's right. And you could also buy a rubberized snap-on solid hard case with screen protector, case opener, and stylus pin for Samsung Illusion/Galaxy Proclaim i110 version straight talk.
But don't tell anyone.
All right. Well, now is the time we get serious and we say thanks to everybody for sticking, not only for sticking with us for an hour and a quarter, but for sticking with us for however long you've been listening. I mean,
Another way back,
we still have people listening to us that were started in 2005, which is incredible. And thanks to you, Steve, for sticking with the whole project for so long. And, you know,
I think it's a wonderful thing for us to do, and it's our friendship and our friendship with all of our listeners and viewers.
Yeah.
And
more all the time, more friends all the time.
Absolutely.
So cheers to you. Happy holidays, everybody. Mm-hmm. And the happiest and most prosperous new year ever next year.
And enjoy the nap before Christmas.
With your fly PA and your floppy stopper hoppy thing.
And
And your hippie weenie.
Cheers.
Oh, I didn't hit record. No, I'm just kidding. Boy, that expression.